These voices belong to Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh. They were recorded as part of a project called Music in Exile, which aims to document the stories and music traditions of displaced people whose culture and existence are at risk. Sasha Ingber is a journalist and the project's co-founder. She joined me on the line from Washington, D.C., and I began by asking what she learned about the role of music in Rohingya communities.
Before I left for Bangladesh, it wasn't clear to me how much we would find in terms of music. There really was very little written about it, and I wasn't quite sure what I would find. But there were a number of musicians, people who were very passionate about their mandolins and their lyrics. And what I learned was that music to the Rohingya community in Bangladesh's refugee camps, it's very much a part of their identity. It's a chance for them to document the atrocities, the injustice, to voice their longing for their homeland and ask questions about the future. So music was this incredibly powerful tool that people would use not only to communicate with each other, but to outsiders who really wanted to listen, people like me.
And can you just explain a little bit about the type of music you recorded there, what kind of instruments people were using, or perhaps the kinds of themes your subjects were singing about?
Yeah, well, the most common instrument that people played was the mandolin, which is, of course, a string instrument. Many times it would be accompanied by singing, and they were often singing what is called taranas. It's almost like a poem that's sung, and the themes really dealt with a sense of mourning, a sense of injustice, looking at what they had been subjected to back in Myanmar. Some people made songs that were almost like inventories of leaders from the past in their community in Rakhine State, which is on the west coast of Myanmar. And they were trying to remember their past because so much of it has really been stripped away from them. One of the most powerful perceptions that I had in walking through the refugee camps was the sense that people were denied so much in so many years of oppression and genocide. Many of the musicians that I met were not literate, so they had committed these songs just to memory, because the worst thing that could happen to them, other than losing their lives and their loved ones and their land, is being completely forgotten.
And we've got a clip from one of the musicians you recorded. Let's just have a listen to that now. This is from a musician called Din Islam. What can you tell us about him?
Din Islam was in his early 20s, and he had fled Myanmar in August 2017, along with some 700,000 people over the months ahead. And while he was fleeing, his father, who was an older man, he wasn't able to keep up. And Dean said that bullets hit him, and they weren't able to stop and carry him or help him. And when they returned to the village at one point before eventually making it to Bangladesh, they found that Dean's father had died. And he said that his mandolin in his village in Myanmar had burned. So he saved up money and he bought a new mandolin in the refugee camp, one that had come from Myanmar. It's like this black and white, very like beautiful wooden instrument. And he played this song called Rohingya People of Arakan, which is a name that is used to describe that region historically. And, you know, it's really a song about all of the oppression. And he told me that he used to play music back in Myanmar, happy songs, but that since he went through this experience, losing his father and seeing his community get shattered, that he really felt this responsibility to play music that had sorrow, that allowed him to express just this deep sadness and sense of injustice.
And we have another clip from Mustava. Let's have a listen to that. From what I could tell, she's quite unique because there aren't too many women musicians.
Yeah, absolutely. Mustava, she was just a pillar of strength. There was this confidence to her. There was this warmth. She talked about how being a woman, she wanted to make music and she didn't really care if other people were okay with that. And that even sometimes girls would come up to her and ask her how she had done it. And essentially, she fled in a different wave of violence because of Myanmar's security forces in the 90s. It was a time when she said that she was seeing children abused and cows being stolen, and forced labor was an issue that the Rohingya community was having to deal with. And she and her husband fled with their six-month-old baby. And they arrived in the camp, and that's when she realized that she wanted to start learning to play music. So she would sing, and she learned the harmonium. So at one point in this song, Mustava says, "There is no justice in that country. Children are abducted and thrown into the fire. Small breastfed babies get taken away." Then she says a little bit later, "Who should I share my heartache with? Oh, Rohingya community, we have no hope in Arakan."
The Rohingyas have long been persecuted in Myanmar, and many would have lived through extremely traumatic events. So I was just wondering how easy it was to make these recordings. Were people quite open with you, or were some people afraid of performing or of perhaps drawing too much attention to themselves?
I think that there was, in general, a sense of comfort and an openness to sharing, but there was also a concern about other people in the camp hearing their songs. There is a presence of an armed group that has put pressure on people, and so some of the musicians that we recorded, they insisted that we leave the main area of the refugee camp so that they could play the music that they wanted. I really think that in general, the music that we've recorded with Music in Exile has opened this door to sharing aspects of their lives that you wouldn't necessarily get just by learning about why they fled. I think that the Rohingyas feel forgotten by the international community. This genocide from 2017 resulted in such a devastating consequence that we're still seeing the results of today, but we haven't seen much action. We haven't seen that much discussion of what could possibly happen in the future to safeguard the Rohingya community and build a future for them.
Your own family has experience with persecution and displacement. During World War II, your grandfather was a prisoner at the Nazi concentration camp at Buchenwald in central Germany. Can you just tell us about him and how his experience and his relationship with music influences your work?
Yeah, it really does. His experiences have informed who I am. When I knew him, I was just a child. I was about 12 years old when he died. And so I never really got to ask him the questions that I would have wanted to know as an adult. He had these dreams of being an opera singer. And all of that was upended when anti-Semitism took on full force and resulted in him being thrown into concentration camps. So he lost his citizenship. He was essentially just like the people that I go out and record, just a different era. So for me, there's like just a curiosity there about how people deal with it and what they can do to find meaning and what they can preserve. And if he were still around, he would probably think I was crazy for going to some of the places I've been. But it's important that somebody's out there doing it.